And we're back. Smart Brand Marketing, another episode. Today with me, I have Rachel Meza. She's an expert in pre-sales copy or a direct response copywriter. Used to be a freelancer. No, you're a freelancer now. Used to be in an agency. Is that correct?
I am. Yep. So okay. I used to have an agency and shut that down and relaunched as a full-time freelancer.
Why did you go from the agency to the freelance business?
I was just making a big shift in my life. I had started a agency, and what we did was SEO optimized sales copy, because I used to have an SEO business and used to do content marketing and copy, and wanted to leverage both of those skills that I had developed over the last decade or so. And it was really successful really fast, because it was a huge gap in the market that we were filling between people who could create these pages that could develop this long-term traction in generating organic traffic, and also focus on the sale and converting people and talking to the reader. And so as it grew, of course, everything that comes with success and realizing that came with it. And I realized that it wasn't the money or this empire legacy business that I wanted to build. I really just wanted to work on great projects that I was passionate about, and was really passionate about the craft of copy. And as you know, when you start running an agency, you get to do less and less of that. So I relaunched as a full-time freelancer, and now I work one-on-one with clients and media buyers and major publishers, and I'm just enjoying it so much more.
Getting
my hands dirty.
Don't you feel like you left some of the leverage behind? Like, now you have to do all the work. You can't delegate as much because you don't have that agency team. It's all you. You know, you're like a solopreneur. If you don't work, there's no money coming in.
I did at first. I really was kind of terrified the first couple of months that I shut it down and doubted myself and my decision. And I felt that. I was like, oh, if I don't work now, nothing's going to come in. And I've been very fortunate that I've been able to relaunch quite quickly and now have a bit of redundancy built into my business, because I've got a bit of a waiting list for clients. And when I work with publishers and media buyers, I also earn royalties off of my work. And so that kind of builds in a little bit of a safety net. So if I, for example, I got sick this past week and I was just flat on my face for 3 days and couldn't work. And I always think about that. Like, what if I need to stop working for a little bit? So I try to build in as much redundancy as I can. And I also have several coaching students, and I also release copywriting and conversion courses. And so that kind of helps take care of that cushion. But I thought about that a lot at first, and it was terrifying when I first shut it down. But now I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I'm so much happier now and really enjoying what I do.
Could you tell the listeners what that looks like? Because, you know, you mentioned residual. I don't think people listening understand what you mean. So what's that structure like? If someone hires you for a project and you get the work done, how is that payment structured? Do you get paid up front? Do you get paid some up front then at the end? And then what's the residual part look like? Just so people can understand the concept of what you're doing.
Absolutely. It actually varies depending on the type of client that I work with. So I work with major publishers. And so these are big publishing companies, excuse me, that have lists with millions and millions of paid subscribers, and they put out a promo, and if they do $1 million on that promo, then it's a failure for them. So these are huge publishers. So for them to pay a large upfront fee and a smaller royalty commission on the back end is better for them, because they'll recoup that cost very quickly. And so with the major publishers, I generally charge more upfront and earn anywhere from 3 to 5% on the sales that my copy brings in. But when I work with smaller entrepreneurs or smaller businesses, meaning they're not seven figures, or maybe they're low seven figures, for them, it's not as viable to pay commissions. They may not have that structure in place. So for them, we'll just do a flat project fee. And for media buyers, which is a third type of client that I work with, a lot of their campaigns are all about testing. So a lot of times my copy isn't tied directly to the sale, at least not at first. So I usually work with them on a per piece or per project basis, because they're putting out 10 to 20 different themes or ideas or hooks to test what the audience is going to resonate with best before dumping a ton of money into a new campaign. And so for them, again, we wouldn't want to work on a commission or performance-based option because the sale is quite far away from that first initial testing phase. Does that make sense?
It does. And the royalties, are they tracked based on the sales themselves or the conversions from your pre-sale page to the actual landing page? How do they track that?
With the publishers, I'm writing the final sales page. And a lot of times these are these huge, long behemoths, these big sales pages or VSLs, video sales letters, that are tied directly to the sale. So if someone reads through my sales page, they click a button and put in their credit card information. So there's no question because they land on my copy and then they buy or don't buy. So it's quite simple. But like we talked about with entrepreneurs, a lot of times they have longer, more complicated funnels, especially for courses or consulting. And so that's where it gets a little bit more complicated. And that would be on a per project basis that we negotiate it, whatever works best for how their business is structured.
Yeah, because you're focusing on the pre-sales pages, which we'll go into in a second. That's why I was just wondering, because with the landing page, super simple, right? If someone lands on it and buys conversions, easy to see. But with the pre-sale page, that's putting another piece in front of that sales page. So if someone else wrote the sales page and you're writing a pre-sale, you know, that's why I was wondering. So if people are listening, you know, they can kind of get an idea. How is that tracked? Like, how are the conversions, you know, impacting your royalties?
Yep. And so that would be only when we're talking about royalties or commissions on pre-sale pages, which are sometimes called advertorials, that kind of structure would be very specifically for a company or publisher or entrepreneur who has their funnels dialed in really tight. So they know exactly what's converting where. And then if we change anything about that funnel, it's very easy to see where the shift is.
Yeah. So usually it's got to be a lot of volume going through that funnel.
Yeah, but it would be quite rare that we'd work in a royalty structure on pre-sale pages. Usually this would be for these long-form video sales letters, VSLs, or long-form sales pages.
Okay, great.
And then the pre-sale pages are usually as part of a consulting package or just a per-project basis.
Cool. So explain, what are these pre-sale pages? Maybe you can give some examples too so people can visualize what that is.
Absolutely, yeah. So these are pages that they prime readers to buy before they land on your sales page. So what these are interstitial pages that go by different names depending on what kind of marketer you're talking to. So sometimes they're called driver pages or customer activation pages, but traditionally these were called advertorials. And advertorials are always this weird mystery piece of copy that everyone knows about but doesn't quite know what to do with. That we all live online instead of in the newspapers where you'd see these in editorial style. But they're still really relevant and very effective, even more so today, because people are over-marketed to and audiences are inherently skeptical. So regardless of what you want to call them, these are landing pages or story-based copy that goes in between that initial touch point and the point where you ask for the sale. So that might your initial touch point might be a Facebook ad or an email, and this would go immediately after that first touch point before people land on your sales page. And so by using these, it acts as a middleman between that initial touch point and the point where you ask them to buy, because you can prime your readers a little bit first and get them into the right mindset to buy before you show them your sales message. And that way, they're more open to hearing what we have to say instead of just switching off right away or clicking away.
Yeah, those used to be super tricky in magazines. I remember when I was younger and I would read something like a Maxim and, you know, there's an article, like a 2-page article, I'm reading through it. And I'm like, oh, this is like very biased in one direction. And then on the bottom, it says special advertising, like article, like very little letters. Remember those?
Like yep, that was the original native advertising, right? Copy disguises content.
Yeah, so what would you say the main point of this advertising model is online, right? So you get someone from a Facebook page, is it to get them to trust you more, to kind of warm them up to buy? Like, what is the main reason to have that in?
Yep. They're used in different ways depending on what you would like to do. So, for example, you can use them to extend your funnel to get around compliance issues. So if Facebook is rejecting your ad for some reason, sometimes these pages are used to extend that funnel and make it more compliant. But they're also used by marketers who need to test a lot of ideas at the beginning of a campaign. So, for example, we talked about the media buyers. They often use these to test out a bunch of themes or big ideas and see what resonates best with the market before dumping a ton of money into the new campaign. But regardless, usually you're always using these to warm up cold traffic or really skeptical audiences so that readers are primed to buy and are moving towards that decision-making process before you even show them your sales page.
What do sections of that look like? So could you walk us through just like a regular template, just an average one? I know they differ, but just, you know, like you would have an intro and then like what would happen after that? Like how do you start it off and how do you finish one of these?
So Jade, it's very similar to how you would write a sales letter or a video sales letter, VSL. And the lead is going to be your most important part. And that's usually what we're changing and switching out when we're testing different ideas, different themes or different formats. For example, a couple of different structures that you might use would be story-based copy where you're telling a story, or you might use that good old listicle. You see this on BuzzFeed all the time, right? Like the 12 things you should never do to lose belly fat fast or something like that. And then traditionally, and this still works very well, you've got that editorial or news style or educational style article, which is presenting information that the reader wants to learn about, but still moving them towards the sale, the purchase decision.
But you're not really pitching at the end.
No. So that's pretty important. This is a really important part of writing editorials or pre-sale pages. Before you do anything, it's important to get clear on the purpose of this page. And you need to make sure that the purpose is not to sell your stuff or present your sales message on this page. So you want to leave that for your sales page and let that sales page do the heavy lifting. But the whole goal of this pre-sale page is to help move your prospect further up the buyer's awareness scale or further down the buyer's purchase cycle. So if you've ever heard of the buyer cycle, sometimes we refer to these levels of awareness that someone is in when they're getting ready to make a purchase decision. So, and that sometimes is called latent pain versus actual pain, or in copywriting, we talk about being unaware or most aware. And if someone's unaware, then you just want to get them to problem aware and help them identify that they actually have a problem, because they may not even know at that stage that they have a problem that needs solving. They may know that something's wrong, but not know what it is. And at that point, if you're throwing your product in their face, that's too fast. They're gonna think you're being salesy and just click away. But if someone is really aware, meaning they're aware of you and the problems that they have, they may have already even explored potential solutions out there and even looked at prices maybe, then at that point, if you're approaching them really indirectly, like with a story or something, then they may ignore you. You risk being ignored because those people are further along that awareness scale and are looking for a really good deal or a guarantee that's gonna push them off the fence because they've already gone through the fact-finding process. So it's important not to rush it. You gotta hold their hand and walk them up this awareness scale.
So what's a good way to get people to take the next step? How would you get the call to action involved in there? Because, you know, one way is just doing remarketing on the people who've seen that pre-sale thing. One is just having it on your website and having them hopefully look at your case studies or services. But if you don't have those two options in place, is there a better option?
So how I like to approach it is, when you're designing or thinking about the content that you want to put in your pre-sale page, I always suggest choosing one thing that you want your readers to know, believe, or understand by the time they're reading your page. So what's that one thing you need them to believe before they can click through to your sales page that would help them be ready to hear that sales message? And then create a story around that and show them that you get them and understand them and focus on that one single thing. And then your only other goal is to connect that back to your offer or the problem that your offer is solving for your reader. and then just suggest that they can get more information. And so there's a lot of different, I guess, schools of thoughts about how to logistically put those CTA links in. Personally, I like to do three. I like to do a really subtle one right in the beginning, a really subtle one right in the middle, and then your last one can be a little bit more direct, where you actually prompt someone, click here to get more information or click here to take the next step. But those first two, you don't want to jar them out of the story or the value that you're providing. So I don't like to put CTAs at the top or until the very end that are too obvious or too direct.
What would a good CTA look like then? Because, you know, you obviously don't want click here now to buy this product, right? You don't want that. What would you put in instead?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of blogs on my website if people want to see that, that give some really specific examples and kind of walk through step by step and how I structure these CTAs. But for example, let's say that you are selling a product that was used to treat eczema. It's a cream to treat eczema. So that first link is just going to highlight anchor text or the words that make up the link. It's just going to highlight that maybe there's something interesting about these words. So maybe the sentence is something like, if you have eczema and dry, itchy skin, maybe you highlight dry, itchy skin, and that's your first link. And maybe the second link is getting a little bit more direct. So maybe the sentence says, if you've been looking for relief from red, itchy skin, and then relief from red, itchy skin would be your second CTA. And then that last one is where you can be a little bit more direct. And maybe you've gone through this story about how you cured your eczema. And you could say something like, if you'd like to get more information about natural remedies, click here. And that would be your final CTA. But depending on how much education you need, how complicated your offer is, or how much education your audience needs, depending on their awareness level, you may or may not be mentioning your product or your brand at this point. You may just be prompting them to take the next step. And so that's the biggest thing to pay attention to, is you don't want to shove them up this awareness scale if they're not ready for it.
So let me get your take on something. We've had some challenges with pre-sale pages. Usually it's because we're running paid traffic to it. Paid traffic is not cheap, not anymore for the most part. So you have these two ideas then, right? Do I write something that's really clickbaity because I want a lot of people to go to my pre-sale page, or do I want something very specific and targeted that's not going to get clicked on a lot? And the problem with the clickbaity stuff is people click through, they read the page, but they never buy. They're not buyers. You know, the people who usually like to click on these stupid, like, BuzzFeed articles, they are not a good audience, right? So how do you handle the positioning of these pre-sale pages to get the right people to click through? Because you need the click-throughs, but also to get the buyers in.
Yep. I hate to sound like a broken record, but it goes back to those awareness levels. So if you've got something that you think is clickbaity, or that you think sounds salesy or scammy, or you think that it's a bad audience clicking on those links, then in my experience, that just means that sales message isn't written for you. So there's a reason those people are clicking on that link, and it's because that's where they are currently in the buyer's awareness scale. And so usually those clickbaity titles will work really, really well with unaware or highly skeptical audiences. So that's going to be people that may not even know that they have a problem, or maybe if they know about their problem, they may not know about potential solutions out there yet. And so they need that education, they need that information before they're ready to hear about products, which is why a lot of times they don't buy. It's because you're trying to rush them up the awareness scale without holding their hand and walking them down the path of making a purchase decision by the hand. Does that make sense?
It does. You've mentioned the awareness scale multiple times. Can you walk us through it so we understand it?
Absolutely. So this is this concept is taught in a lot of different ways depending on who you're learning it from. Where I first learned copywriting, I studied this awareness scale by a marketer named Eugene Schwartz, and he wrote a book called Breakthrough Advertising. And it's also talked a lot about in another book called Great Leads by Masterson and Ford. So if you want to learn more about it, check out Breakthrough Advertising or Great Leads. But what this awareness scale does is it ranges from unaware to most aware. So unaware is someone that doesn't even know that they have a problem, or they're almost completely unaware of products, solutions, the details around their problem. And then you go to problem aware, which is where they're aware of their problem, but they may not know about potential solutions. So at this point, all you're going to do is start giving them hope that there is a solution out there to help solve their problems and that someone else has successfully done it. But you're not talking about your product or your brand yet. And after problem aware, we go up to solution aware. So this is where people are starting to discover your competitors or products like yours. This is where they start discovering specific solutions and how they work that are going to help them solve their problem. And they may even start looking at prices at this point. And after solution aware, that's where we go to product aware. And so solution, you're exploring potential solutions. And when you move to product aware, you're exploring brands and moving towards that purchase decision because you're looking at which specific option at which price point by which company is right for you. And the last step is most aware. And that's someone who's done the research, they're ready to buy, and they just need to pull the trigger. And usually that's where we're most direct with our marketing. We want to give them a really good deal or a really good guarantee that just kind of pushes them over the fence. But when you go all the way back down to unaware, you want to be more indirect. And that's where we use stories or that clickbaity stuff. That's where that works really well because they need a lot more information at that stage. So we go unaware, product aware, solution aware. I'm sorry, unaware, problem aware, solution aware, product aware, most aware. That's the awareness scale.
Great. You mentioned stories many times, and I've had other guests on the podcast saying, yeah, create stories around your business. What tips do you have for someone that wants to write a pre-sale page and create a story around their business or problem? You know, because writing stories is not that simple. It seems simple, but it's not. Not to write a good story that actually gets people reading through and excited about it. So give us some tips or strategies on getting that in place.
Yeah, great question. And I hear this question a lot. I've written so many blog posts answering questions about creating stories because this seems to be a big sticking point for people. And so if you want some like specific actionable stuff in detail, then I highly recommend, I've got tons of free stuff on my website that you can go look through. But like you said, you've been playing with paid traffic, and you and I both know that it's not always enough just to throw up a Facebook ad or an email and then send people straight to a sales page. So sometimes that still works if you've got the right list or the right product for the right market. But most of the time, you've got to nurture your audience, indoctrinate them into your brand, or give them something valuable before you ask for the sale. And so by using stories, we can approach cold or skeptical audiences because they make a personal connection with people. And stories work really well on us because stories get us into an emotional state. And if you can get people into an emotional state, then that kind of turns off that logical part of your brain that brings up doubts and objections when we hear a sales message. So stories kind of work as this off switch to logic. And so you want to go like any copy that you write, you want to start with research and hear what kind of stories your customers are hinting at. So you can go into Reddit threads or Facebook comments or forums, or if you want to go analog, go talk to your audience. That's the best way. And find out what people are concerned with, what their biggest pain points are, and then ask questions to kind of prompt them to bring those stories out. Someone's going to tell you a hint at a story. So for example, if someone's talking about, let's go back to eczema. If you're talking to someone about eczema, if you're asking people how they feel about it or say that ask people to explain how it's impacted their life, people are going to tell you their stories. And then all you need to do is just take those stories and connect them back to your offer. And so people always get stuck up on how do I create these stories? How do I create these stories? And I just say that life is a wild ride. You can't make this stuff up sometimes. And so just take it from real life. Don't try to make it up. All you have to do is connect it back to your offer.
Perfect. On that note, let's finish up. and where can people find you?
Absolutely. If anyone wants to learn more, I've got so much free training material on my website. It's rachelmazza.com. M-A-Z-Z-A is my last name. And then I've also just released a complete training course on this. So it digs into the fundamentals of how these pages work and how to use them. So it's like an advertorial and pre-sale page 101 course. So that's just gone live. And if anyone wants to join right now, I've got a huge discount because it's the first round. And so if you're willing to give me a little feedback, then I'd be glad to give it to you at half price. So if anyone wants to ask questions too, I'm always happy to answer them. So just reach out.
Cool. I'll have most of the stuff mentioned in the show notes. And if anything, just ask Rachel. She'll she'll answer, I hope.
Yeah. Don't be shy. Ask me.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.